Welcome everyone to a new episode of Straightforward. I'm very excited to be here today with Kelsey Johnson, who runs commerce and digital for Coty, the giant French cosmetic company. Welcome, Kelsey.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Bruno. No, it's exciting to be here.
Thank you for your time and for agreeing to share your wisdom here with us. So what I really found fascinating in your story, Kelsey, we've been to so many different traditional companies in retail and now at a cosmetic, a CPG company, right? And I was introducing, you know, these new ideas of e-commerce, digital, direct-to-consumer, right? So really wanted to understand a little bit of your journey and go with you into that journey. Like maybe we can learn something with you there. You know what? How actually you were able to pull off those changes? You know, like that's the challenge that most of our audience here is trying to, you know, to go through in their companies. Right? Really kind of helping their companies to understand technology, understand the potential of digital, and how to sell inside, and how to get people, to kind of rile, you know, around those changes. And we know that's the ideas. Like in theory, everything is cool and nice, but in practice, it's kind of hard to do it, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not rocket science, but it's certainly easier said than done.
Yes, that's my favorite quote of all time is from Yogi Berra. Like, you know, in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice. In practice, there is.
Yeah, this is true, especially in the retail space, especially in the e-commerce space.
Yeah. So can you tell a little bit about what's your journey been? Like, I know the companies that you've been and how do you get to be where you are at Coty today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my career on the retail side. So began kind of my journey at Macy's.com. And this was back kind of before Macy's had gone omnichannel. So if you remember, they were kind of trailblazing that whole world and call it, let's say 2010 to 2015, as they were kind of building all of that up. So started there as a merchant, as a merchandise assistant, up to an assistant buyer and working in children's wear. And it was an exciting time because Macy's does a fantastic job sort of getting people ready for retail fundamentals, right? They're like, here's how you write a purchase order. Here's how you make a buy. Like, here's how you go out to market and talk to people. So great experience in fundamentals. And also, again, like as they were pioneering omnichannel, it was really exciting to kind of be in the space of the leader who was defining for an industry what that all looked like. Not only in terms of practice, like you said, but also technologies, because we had to have e-commerce to support that. We had to have an app to support that. There was talk of buy online, pick up in store, which was mind-boggling at the time for many people, but got some really good training at Macy's. Ultimately, decided I wanted to get some more retailer experience as well. So after being there for a few years, I went over to work for Saks, worked across different buying and planning roles in my time there. And really kind of the transformation that we were driving at Saks was figuring out how we integrate acquisition of Gilt Group into our ecosystem. So we were omni by nature. We were acquiring these new digital platforms and figuring out how do we give that platform a reason to be? How do we have a unique selling proposition for those brands on that experience versus what was happening in the world of Saks. And then after a great kind of experience there, ended up going over to Jet.com, which was subsequently Walmart e-commerce after being purchased, and had the opportunity to lead category management for some beauty categories over there and really redefine the entire site experience. And though I didn't know it as at the time, because it was a pure player when I joined, it was a strictly sort of e-com business, ended up sort of defining what that omni-channel world turned into over the couple of years that I was working there. So brings me now to Coty, where I'm sort of working on this e-commerce team for the United States. Really, my job is to find ways that we can accelerate the digital beauty experience and simultaneously continue to drive omnichannel. So my expertise has really been born out of driving transformation and change in digital and retail environments and figuring out how we do that in a really sustainable way for the company.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to kind of dig deeper with you. Like, the digital environment in our experience, like it moves so fast, right? So, and it's so much more unpredictable than you know, the world of traditional business or the traditional way we kind of learn to see the world, right? So, and how to kind of to bring back that that pace and that agility, you know, into the vision of a digital business into a traditional company, right? So you did that in many different companies there. I'm really kind of curious to see what are the challenges? Like, of course, there's a it seems like there's a big fundamental mindset challenge, like to reconcile for a bit. But I just wanted to hear from you. What are the challenges that you saw in your journey, trying to come, you know, with the different perspectives, different ideas, and into a business that's already has some beliefs and, you know, has a behavior established, right? So, and they're successful. Like, quite frankly, like, in our experience, the most difficult thing is like successful organizations. How we actually tell people, hey, this is now it has to be this way. Like, come on, we've been successful for so long doing this way. But why it has to be a different way, right? So
that's, The way that I like to think about it is it allows you an entrepreneurial mindset in the context of a very, very large corporation, which has been my niche and a place that I find a lot of energy and joy. But I think in terms of challenges, there's so many, and they're definitely unique to each individual company and also each individual role, right? Each different kind of team and cohort certainly has their own nuances there. So I'm going to take this sort of through the lens of leading transformation in digital organizations, because I think your audience is looking for more effective ways to do just that. But I'll outline it with three. I think first and foremost, I have found that knowledge gaps are a big one. So in any blended retail organization, so I guess in other words, a business model that exists with a variety of channels, everyone is at a different place on their digital journey, right? So that understanding looks really different. And I know in many of the kind of retail organizations that I'd worked for, they were split by store sales and e-com sales to begin with. So we had these e-com teams built with this very, very deep digital expertise. And then sort of on the store side, maybe you had these brilliant merchants and people who for maybe the better part of 25 years are true masters at their craft, but they hadn't maybe grown up in the space of digital like I had from the beginning of my career. So I think it's really understanding and acknowledging that nobody's better or worse. They're just coming from really different skill sets and definitely like richer perspectives, honestly, when you get all those minds together. And just there might be some extra steps to take to upskill your partners or peers, but understanding that there is a knowledge gap is certainly one of the key challenges. I think second, I would say this is one that I personally really struggle with, is the pace of ideas that are generated versus the speed of a digital infrastructure that is available to you in a commerce space. So we have a lot of great minds in this industry, as you know, and you speak to many of them on any given week, but I find that these minds are generating a lot of ideas a lot faster than platforms and infrastructure can handle. And especially you kind of zoom into the last few years in the digital world and how much has exploded, not only in terms of growth, but just the complexity of channels, right? Like now we have buy online, pick up in store, we've got ship from store, ship to home, like all of these, you know, kind of different methods. And I don't know that we have developed our digital infrastructure as fast as an industry as we need to meet that changing consumer behavior. And then I think the third one is just the noise in the landscape. So it's really distracting out there. There is all this talk of Web3 and the metaverse and NFTs and crypto and everything else on any given day. And I think for me, it's a challenge to say, how do you cut through all the sexy stuff that's happening to really prioritize what might be right for your consumer and get that right and then continue to build upon that?
Yeah, and it's not easy to get, you know, consensus and people kind of rallying, you know, around one thing, right? Like in a complex organization, big complex organizations, like everyone, the level of, you know, the people are allured by different things, and get that, you know, focus on a bigger team is definitely one of the biggest challenges. So I wonder, in the first challenge that you mentioned, kind of the level up of knowledge, right? Like, I guess it takes some humility to, you know, the digital team that usually know those people that think they're ahead of everybody to acknowledge that, you know, there is a lot of knowledge like specific to that business that are coming from, you know, where it's coming from. Sometimes, you know, like a 100-year-old organization, like, you know, like the ones you've been. So like how do you actually leader, like to kind of give that sense of humility to the team. So kind of, hey, let's hear out a little bit of the what people know that have been here for longer and dealing with the selling and strategy to sell those products. Like, how do you actually get to the, I think it's maybe it's easier to, the others say, hey, I you know the people that are not digital, that kind of that feel that hey, I'm not a digital native, so I need to learn. But how to impress that urgency to the digital teams that they have to learn to the other side of the pond?
Yeah, I think it definitely starts with the leaders that are in place, right? And I think as our jobs, leading digital, leading transformation, and all of this, it's our job to make sure that everyone understands that, like, digital's no better than any other channel. It's a piece of the pie. And I think if we put our consumer hat on, we all understand that we all use every method of channels, like to shop and to fill our own consumer needs. So there's a humility by way of, you know, they say that the best leaders are, you know, when they're given praise, they say, I got lucky. And when they're in a bad spot, they're the first to take responsibility. So it's definitely kind of maintaining that mindset and thinking about how you lead your teams. But more practically, in terms of kind of addressing that knowledge gap, I think it's about prioritizing relationships first. And whether it's digital or not, this is just part of my value set, something that I really believe in terms of conducting business, is going to people with the mindset of help me help you is huge, and it's very valuable. And all of us working in blended retail channels might not realize it, but we wear a really important hat of being internal salespeople who have to influence new ways of thinking. And the best way to do this is really to identify your own digital goals and then sort of ladder them into the motivators of your audience. And it's really the art of stakeholdering, right? You can garner their interest by way of helping them solve a problem and make a really complex, entangled digital ecosystem a lot more digestible to somebody who might have not grown up in the space.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Usually be the change you want to see in the world, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Really cool. And I wonder about the last challenge that you made, the second challenge, which I guess has to be a little bit of the third challenge, like the focus and the ability to execute on the technology side, right? Which is, I understand, like, probably your experience, I can imagine, coming from, you know, traditional companies, there's a lot of legacy to deal with as well. Like, not only the e-commerce or the front of the office, there's a lot of back office integrations, and it can get really, you know, slow and frustrating to do things at the speed of light, right? Like, you just can't do all the things you wanted to do, right? So, how do you actually you deal with it? Like, you try to kind of focus and do less, or kind of try to do experiments and do things like not to try it out things in small things, or how you deal with this, you know, the need to do a lot and the reality of having very limited resources to actually being able to do a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Or you just sit and cry in a.
No, I say you have to just laugh, because otherwise you might cry depending on any given day. But no, I'm kidding. But I think when we're focused, because especially many of the people who may be listening in terms of your audience, like they most likely have a business that they have to deliver, right? It's not just about creating and transforming and all of that. There's numbers associated with it at the end of the day too. So I think
no one that I know was given like 5 years, with a free note. You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You numbers yeah. to meet. Just give me
test and learn.
Those in 3 years. No.
Yeah,
like, has a quarter to beat.
Oh, how nice would it be, Bruno, if we just had that at our disposal? But what I will say is, when we're focused on delivering a P&L, right? We're focused on the P&L, and it might be uncomfortable to take a pause from this mindset of just driving, and really carve out the time to think and build out long-term plans for infrastructure, right? So, for me, to design a blueprint of priorities and get that buy-in fast, it's not just the business, it's the infrastructure. You're building an infrastructure plan. So many companies in the space right now, they're juggling a lot of conflicting priorities. And by way of example, I remember when I was at Walmart, one of the things we were exploring implementing was a virtual try-on the site for makeup, for cosmetics. And our digital product teams were really focused, and this was pre-pandemic, they were focused more on the online grocery world and making sure that user journey was completely seamless. And frankly, that's the right decision for Walmart. And thank God they did, because that served them very well throughout the last few years, right? But that doesn't mean that I should relinquish the work of doing the job to outline my resource roadmap. It just means that it needs to be done within the context of organizational goals. And then once you have that, to get the buy-in really fast so you don't start to fall behind the competitors. So I think in terms of infrastructure, that's how I think about it. And then in terms of landscape noise, there's a phrase that I heard once and it really stuck with me, and it's become a little bit of a mantra of my professional value set, but it is to liberate the data and socialize the insights. So I am a huge data nerd, and I think that is the most powerful resource that digital leaders have at their disposal. So if you think about it, you really have a direct line to your consumers and understanding all of their wants and needs. So as you're kind of working through cutting through that landscape noise, the best thing you can do for your teams and the whole organization really is to pinpoint who's your consumer, like do that proper user journey work and the mapping and get really, really crisp on what your team is expected to deliver, and then how those priorities kind of ladder into your infrastructure blueprints and ultimately facilitate all of your goals.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Like, you know, like when you say kind of a socialized data, like it's like giving more giving a broader access to the data and insights that that data yields, and let people kind of make decisions and kind of be more autonomous on their analysis and what they have to do. That's what you mean by it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times too, right, like we fall victim in a lot of ways in this very consumer hungry world. You know, you're selling stuff, especially like working in beauty. It's such an emotional experience. We oftentimes just think we have gut feelings about things, or we hypothesize around like what we think is the right decision, but do we actually know it to be the right decision? Like, let's go validate it. We have all of the information that we need at our fingertips. It's just a matter of digging into it and kind of packaging it up in a way that makes it understandable for an audience.
I see. It's kind of a trying to kind of a create discipline to go with our guts, but let's find the data that validates or invalidates our guts, our gut feeling about a certain hypothesis. Cool.
Yeah, and hopefully, Bruno, it allows us a little bit more runway for this kind of no P&L accountability, test and learn mentality that allows us to do something a little bit more dynamic if we have the data to back it up.
Yeah. One of the things we see a lot of our clients doing is actually, you know, even if they have like a gut feeling that's not backed by data, but it's kind of doing small bets, like, okay, we're doing this, but it's not like a 9-12 month plan, you know, with $1 million, you know, resource utilization to actually, you know, this, how we actually experiment, like really experiment, like what we can do to validate that hypothesis that we know we spend, you know, little money and little time on it to until we commit to the next step on that direction, right? So like really trying to not bet the farm.
Yeah. And I think going back to kind of the first point about the help me help you with peers who might not be in the same place as you, what better place to test than digital? Because you now have stores where you think about your CapEx, you think about the labor that's involved in all these decisions. Like, that's a really easy way that you can kind of go to counterparts and different cross-functional teams and create value for yourself and for a digital enterprise. So it's powerful.
That's a great point. Like, it's much cheaper to test in digital than, you know, like a in the real world where you have, you know, kind of have products and setups of stores and train people in local, right?
So it's big time.
It's way faster and cheaper to test ideas in the digital space. Really cool. And to finish up, like maybe just where are we heading to? Like what are you excited about for the future, like cosmetic online or even retail, like what are plans?
Yeah, it's a question that is near and dear to my heart. I'm going to tell you that social commerce, it's something that everybody's kind of been buzzing about. Certainly, it's something that China is light years ahead of the US on, but The space is really exciting to me because I think it's the beginning of a new era of e-commerce, right? So you think about a user journey on like an Amazon or a Walmart or some of these more traditional retailers. And my view is that those are going to morph into really more replenishment engines, right? You think about it, you go there, you land, you search, you convert, you're buying your paper towels, your toilet paper, your makeup, whatever it is that you need. But social platforms, by way of speaking out of the other side of my mouth, they're going to be the new discovery journey. They're the future of commerce, and it's going to only get more exciting as we see how Web3 will continue to evolve, and the internet, as we know, it's going to become maybe a little bit less centralized and a little bit more democratized. So I think that industry-wide, merchants and marketers are going to need to be thinking really hard about the role this plays in their ecosystem. And I think it's something I hear a lot that people talk, oh, like they conflate social commerce with live stream. It's not just about programming live streams. Like you have to sit down and you have to design out a sustainable social commerce strategy for the future. And I know that my team and I spent the better part of 3 to 4 months really like building, poking holes, pressure testing, playing devil's advocate. And it was a really fun journey of healthy debate that landed us with a really like airtight strategy that we think we're now well positioned to be on our way to implementing.
That's a really interesting vision of you know the world, like kind of like I guess like you're saying all the big Amazons and Walmarts become like the pipes, right? Then and you have the brands and like a more on the demand control and like kind of a more I guess even a more balanced ecosystem that we have today, right? So that's an interesting vision. Yeah. Like I hope you're right.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm making what is already a really complex omni-channel universe even more complex with the addition of more channels and journeys. But you know, got to keep moving, got to keep changing.
That's second law of thermodynamics. You know, entropy just grows higher.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool, Kelsey. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your wisdom here with my audience. Thank you so much. You know, good luck on your journey.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And you know, I really enjoy talking to you, and can't wait to tune in to the next kind of guest that you have on here in the next few weeks.
You bet. Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye.